Are you insecure?
No.
No?
No. No. I love who I am.
I can see that.
To me, you have to love yourself before you can love other people.
Thanks for the psychology lesson. The body when I call you a dipshit?
Yeah.
Dipshit?
Yeah.
What are you going to do about it? Not a goddamn thing. Sit there with that gel in your hair, your flipped up collar. Shut up.
Steve Austin is a great, great man. That was a clip from Tough Enough this past Monday night as he buried Luke six ways to Sunday in that final segment of Tough Enough. Another great show. Luke is one of the front runners on the show, if not the front runner, and he was in the bottom three. But we'll get to the Tough Enough report a little bit later on. This is the 158th episode of the Solo Monster Sounds Off on SCScoops.com. It is Mother's Day, Sunday, May 8th, 2011. Happy Mother's Day to all the moms out there. You can follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/Solomonster, or on Facebook at facebook.com/TheSolomonster. So get on there if you are not already. First things first, I did the sound off last weekend, and after it was done recording and uploaded for your listening pleasure, a lot of stuff happened. And one of the things I just want to take a quick moment here to comment on is the events of Sunday night. Obviously, Sunday night was the WWE Extreme Rules pay-per-view, and we'll get to that in a second. But obviously, there was something else going on Sunday night. News was breaking at the end of this weekend, and it was tense for a little bit because, you know, when I first heard that there was a presidential announcement forthcoming, I figured for sure it was something bad. You know, maybe that's the cynic in me, but I automatically assumed, oh shit, we're going to war. And thankfully, that was not the case. Obviously, I don't need to get into the whole thing, and I don't want to spend a lot of time talking about this, but I do want to mention that, to turn on the television and see a man wearing a kilt sitting on top of a street sign playing the bagpipes at 2 in the morning makes me love New York. I just have to say that. The fact is, I'm not going to pull a WWE and get all jingoistic here. Much respect to our men and women overseas who risk their lives so we don't have to. And I just want to sum up this entire situation with a quote from Mark Twain, who once said, "I never wished a man dead, but I have read some obituaries with great pleasure." And I will leave it at that. Extreme Rules, like I said, was Sunday night on pay-per-view. It was a pay-per-view that right here on the show a week ago, I didn't implore people not to order it, but I basically asked the question, is anybody on this earth actually of the belief that this pay-per-view would be worth $50? And many of you obviously agreed with me, and some of you disagreed, and I know many of you actually did order Extreme Rules and watch the pay-per-view. And as it turned out, the general consensus and what I saw of the pay-per-view after the fact showed that Extreme Rules from top to bottom as a wrestling show was probably a better show than WrestleMania. And it doesn't change anything that I said last week. This is what happens when you promote a pay-per-view poorly. You don't give people a reason to spend their hard-earned money on that pay-per-view. I'm not talking about the people who watch live streams on the internet. And sometimes you turn out to have a show that exceeds expectations and is a pretty goddamn great show. And everything I've heard about Extreme Rules and the stuff that I saw, it was a pretty good show. And even so, was it worth $50? I don't know. But shame on WWE for doing a poor job of promoting it. And thumbs up to the talent on the show. There were some great matches. We saw Kofi Kingston. It was an impromptu match. They didn't even bother announcing this in advance. Not that this would have changed my opinion, but this just goes to what I was saying. You know, putting matches on the pay-per-view, yes, it's not a main event. Yes, most people are not going to spend money. You know, their decision is not going to hinge upon whether Kofi Kingston is in a match, but they added a Kofi Kingston-Sheamus match, a tables match at the last minute. Kofi won the U.S. title, and therefore Raw has a secondary belt again instead of having both belts on SmackDown. Karma, Awesome Kong, finally made her in-ring appearance, her first one in WWE, attacking the now retired Michelle McCool. Karma, of course, came out to much fanfare. She has an entrance befitting of a main eventer. Her theme music is awesome. Her whole entrance is very creepy and very well done. And we'll see how long that lasts for. Obviously, to you and me, the big story of the pay-per-view, Christian finally winning the World Heavyweight Championship with a little assist from his friend Edge, Edge making an appearance. Edge is a guy who, you know, God bless him, he just can't get away. You know, he came out on Raw all those weeks ago and said he was retiring and, you know, this was going to be it. And then, of course, he had the retirement ceremony on SmackDown. And I think he was on SmackDown the next week, in fact, before the pay-per-view. He made all the European tour dates to say goodbye each night in each city. And here he is again at the pay-per-view. Now, I'm sure that's probably the end of Edge for now. But goddamn, man, I mean, enough's enough. Get away. Enjoy your retirement. Christian winning the World Heavyweight Championship is one of those moments that, and I have seen the match with him and Alberto Del Rio, and, you know, while it was not the best ladder match I've ever seen, it was a pretty damn good ladder match. And I don't know if Alberto has ever been in a ladder match before down in Mexico. Obviously, they have ladder matches down there. I just don't know. This may well have been his first. He was bumping like a madman. Probably more than he should have, quite frankly. WWE can ill afford to have another main eventer go down to injury, but Del Rio took some pretty sick bumps in this match and some pretty nasty abuse from the ladder, which is very unforgiving, but it made for a great match. And Christian, the sight of him standing on top of that ladder, the crowd exploded. I mean, you look at all the people in the background. It reminded me of a match I saw recently. It was the Triple H Rock ladder match for the Intercontinental Belt from SummerSlam in 1998 at Madison Square Garden. And, you know, Triple H is on top of the ladder. He's, you know, clawing at the belt, trying to get it off the hinge, and he unhinges the championship belt, and you could see all these people in the background in Madison Square Garden just explode. And that's kind of what this reminded me of. And the place went nuts. Edge, of course, was there. He was crying. Christian was going crazy. It was a very emotional moment. Christian, his reaction, the fans' reaction, made the championship mean something. Yeah, I want to see more of that. I want to see people express how much the title truly means to them, because God knows WWE does a piss-poor job of making their belts mean anything. Titles, I'm sorry. But that was a great moment, and I think if you spent $50 on that pay-per-view, some of you probably came away from it thinking it was worth it because of that one moment. And I hope you savored that moment. I really hope you did, because I'm going to have more to say on this in a second. I'm trying to stay in chronological order here because so much happened this week. John Cena, The Miz, John Morrison, Steel Cage match main event. I saw the match. It was good. It wasn't great. It didn't blow me away. And what definitely did not blow me away, but it pissed me off, was John Cena winning the WWE Championship. I know why they did it. They wanted the visual of him holding the belt on Raw the next night, pushing the idea that the match next year at WrestleMania with him and Rock will be for the title. By no means does this mean Cena is not going to lose the belt between now and then regain it again. So we're not necessarily in for, you know, 11 straight months of John Cena as champion, per se. But John Cena, did he really need to win his 10th title? I mean, was that really necessary to take the belt off Miz? I don't know. John Cena and Randy Orton are your two World Heavyweight Champions. How about that? I'm so happy that draft allowed for some new talent to rise to the top. That's really good to see. Anyway, after the show went off the air, Cena took the microphone, and word was still spreading about the death of Osama bin Laden, and there's footage online, and they showed it on Raw of John Cena getting on the announce desk, holding the WWE title and announcing that bin Laden had been captured and, quote, compromised to a permanent end. I could not believe that he said that. Who the hell talks like that? Compromised to a permanent end. I would love to see John Cena's title reign compromised to a permanent end, personally. So we move on to Monday night. Monday night, of course, we had Tough Enough. Steve Austin, as I mentioned, a great man. You don't need me to tell you that. Luke, who is certainly among the cream of the crop on this show and is so easy to hate. He is a fantastic douchebag who I still think wins this whole thing in the end. Although Martin, or Donny Osmond, as they were calling him earlier in the season, because the guy really does look like Donny Osmond. If you don't know who Donny Osmond is, just do a Google search for a photo comparison and you'll see what I'm talking about. Martin is right on his ass on this show. But I still think Luke takes the whole thing. So nice, by the way, to see Booker T back on the show. So nice of him to finally join us after missing so many weeks. We had Rey Mysterio on the show this week. he had some sage words for the cast, kind of a pep talk. I guess we get John Morrison on the show this upcoming Monday night. I guess he can talk about being on Tough Enough before. You may remember John Morrison as John Hennigan was a part of the season 2 cast, I believe, on Tough Enough. But personally, I'd rather have The Miz on this show, as I think he'd have more to offer, coming from a reality show background to being a WrestleMania main eventer and a WWE champion, which John Morrison has not yet accomplished. I mean, really, what the hell is Morrison going to say? I mean, is he going to get up there and say, hey, anybody want to bang my girlfriend? I promise I won't hurt you. I don't know. The women, by the way, on the show are horrible. And apparently we're going to get a double elimination on the show this upcoming Monday night. And I'm almost 100% positive that one of those women, I don't expect both, but certainly one of them, they need to get the boot before they either hurt themselves or they kill somebody else. I mean, it's getting really bad. But still loving Tough Enough all these weeks in. Look forward to the next episode. By the way, I managed to see the very first episode of Lance Storm's new show called World of Hurt, which airs on The Cave in Canada, which is a premium cable channel. I guess it used to be a men's network. And apparently The Cave, it's very hard to find people that actually are subscribed to The Cave. It's not a very popular cable network up in Canada. But nonetheless, World of Hurt airs on that network. And I will say this. I've only watched one episode of it. It's a half an hour show, unlike Tough Enough, which is 60 minutes. And I like Lance Storm a lot. He's a very articulate, very intelligent guy. And when he was an active performer, and he still wrestles occasionally, but for the most part, he's retired. He runs his own school, the Storm Wrestling Academy, up in Calgary, I believe. And I guess, you know, he was presented with this offer to do a show that is very similar to the Tough Enough format, with a few tweaks. For example, there's no cuts at the end of each episode. There will be no cuts. Everybody will be on the show for the entire season. There is no winner. Apparently, this has to do with Canadian television regulations and funding that they get to do the show, whereas if the show turns into a contest, they don't get that funding, so they can't really... You know, you can't really eliminate people, you can't offer a prize, but nonetheless, the show is almost a carbon copy of the way that Tough Enough is, only you have one trainer, and that trainer is Lance Storm, who, while he is a fantastic teacher, I'm sure, and if I suddenly had an urge to become a professional wrestler, Lance Storm and his school would be at the top of my list of places I would want to go. Lance Storm was never known for being the most charismatic guy in the world, and being that he's the only real face on that show, it doesn't have the same sort of appeal that Tough Enough would have when you have a Steve Austin with a Bill DeMott and a Booker T and a Trish Stratus. So I think that's one strike against it. Plus, the other thing about it is, and it's only one episode that I saw, but these people on this show, World of Hurt, are so fucking unlikable. I don't like anybody on this show. They all come across as such, holier-than-thou people who just don't give a shit about respect. They, you know, knock everybody else. They crack jokes about people who get hurt. There was one woman on the show. This is the first episode, mind you. And there's really no formal introduction at the beginning of the show. There's a quick video where Lance Storm explains the show, and then they go right to training. So you don't have an opportunity to really learn anything about any of these people at the beginning of the show. I guess as the season progresses, each episode will focus on a different contestant, for lack of a better term. But within 5 minutes of this episode starting, they're in the ring doing drills and taking flip bumps. And there's this one woman on the show, her name escapes me, I believe it's Irina, who takes a bump. And again, it's a very simple bump for people who are supposed to already have a certain level of pro wrestling experience, as these people are. I think in most cases, if not all, the people on the show are former students of Lance Storm that the TV network recommended they bring back for the show. So here's this woman in the ring who was supposed to simply, from a standing position, do a flip bump onto her back. And the poor girl kind of jumps in the air, doesn't really get any elevation at all, and literally comes down on her head and her neck. And the most priceless thing on the show was Lance Storm's reaction and the reaction of everybody watching outside the ring. They were like, holy shit, they thought they broke her neck. It was pretty brutal stuff. But even the woman who got hurt, she is the most unlikable person on the entire show. So as somebody who is probably not going to be able to see too many other episodes, I had a chance to watch this one. you know, if I watch future episodes and I don't get to learn more about these people, I don't have any incentive to continue watching. Whereas with Tough Enough, I will give them a lot of credit. They've done a very good job of explaining who each person is, why they're there, what their motivation is, and giving you some level of knowledge as to their background, at least for the key characters on the show. World of Hurt, I felt, in this first episode, really didn't offer that. And the other knock on the show, I don't mean to bash it, it was okay, it wasn't great. The drama on this show between contestants, and there's no house, you know, it's not like midway through the episode they're back at the house. I mean, maybe there's a house later on, but in this first episode, the entire show, it's cut up into different days, but pretty much everything is in the gym. And the drama that intensifies between these people is even more contrived than it sometimes comes across on Tough Enough. It just looks so fake. And I'm not even saying that these people in some cases really don't like each other, but the way they edited the show, it just came off as so forced and so scripted and so contrived. And I understand these reality shows, that's the nature of the beast, but don't make it so goddamn apparent. So I wasn't a huge fan of the first episode of Lance's show. It's not his fault, obviously. But it was interesting to contrast the two different shows. And if I watch more episodes in the future, I'll let you know if anything changes. But it doesn't take away from the fact that Lance Storm is a hell of a teacher. Some of his students have already been signed to WWE developmental contracts. He's a hell of a hand. And certainly, I've had people email me before asking me, I want to get into wrestling. I want to train. Who should I train with? Where should I go? I'm not familiar with all of the different wrestling schools in the country, but I will say that if you're serious about becoming a pro wrestler, I would heartily endorse Lance's school. You can go to stormwrestlingacademy.com and check it out. If you're willing to make the trip up to Canada and the frigid temperatures, then by all means, I would certainly recommend it. So that brings us to Monday Night Raw, which was the big birthday celebration for The Rock. Now, the consensus seems to be that you either love this show or you hated this show. There's very little in between. So I'm going to buck that trend and tell you that I fall somewhere in the middle. And I'll tell you why. I don't agree with the people, and I've seen people say this, who thought that Raw Monday Night was the best Raw of the entire year so far. They thought it was just a fantastic show. It was so great. It was the best Raw of 2011, hands down. Off the top of my head, I will admit, I could not tell you which Raw has been the best of the year so far. I just kind of lumped them together in my brain. But it was not this show. I didn't hate it, but it came off flat to me. I was not as enamored with this show as other people were. By no means at all was this one of the best Raws of the year. I mean, if you think this was one of the best Raws of the year, you must have missed some of the earlier episodes of Raw. There's been some pretty damn good shows this year. I'm willing to bet that if I took the time to go back and take a look at the lineups and whatnot for the different episodes, I could pick out two or three that were better than this. Some people complained that there was too much nationalism on this show. Obviously, this was the day after Bin Laden was announced as being captured or killed or what have you. I will say this. I find it insulting that WWE takes every opportunity to shove down our throats the fact that SmackDown on September 13, 2001 was the first public assembly since the 9/11 terror attacks. You mentioned it on the air once on Monday night. Did we really need a fucking did-you-know graphic later in the same show that pushed the same damn thing? I mean, they did this back in the day, and I know why they did it, but there's a point where it becomes tasteless and tacky. And I kind of got that feeling on Monday night. You know, you mentioned it once. Fine. No problem. And it may well be true. But then when we got that stupid graphic later in the show, I just thought to myself, really? Was that necessary? We're all well aware of this fact. You know, WWE does great things with and for the troops. And I personally love Lillian Garcia's rendition of the national anthem. I mean, I always love listening to Lillian. She's got a fantastic voice. It gave me goosebumps. I have no problem with that whatsoever. You want to suck your own dick and tell us how great your ratings are? Fine. You want to tell us how many times you trended on Twitter last week? Go for it. You want to tell us how Raw is the most watched TV show of all time, even though that's complete bullshit? Go ahead. But don't belabor the point when it comes to this stuff. I mean, just say it once and move on. I mean, like I said, this all came off pretty tasteless to me. You know, it's like WWE pointing at themselves and saying, hey, look how great we are over here. Rock came out. He got a hero's welcome. Obviously, Raw was in his hometown of Miami. He led the crowd in the Pledge of Allegiance, which I thought was fine. That was great stuff. I felt like I was back in elementary school. I knew the opening segment was going to go a good 25 to 30 minutes. I just knew. When I saw Rock come out, I knew that this was going to be a long segment, so I didn't mind it. They hyped it up all week as his big birthday celebration, so you had to expect it. And Rock can get away with it because he's so damn entertaining. It was all in good fun. The only negative is that The Rock makes everyone else look so inferior by comparison. It's not his fault. It's just that he's such a bigger star than everybody else in that company rolled up in a ball. It's startling. And every time he appears on the show, which I love, you know, I'm all in favor of having The Rock on TV more often. You know, The Rock loves the business. He loves WWE. I think he's as entertaining as ever. Some people don't like The Rock. That's fine. More people like The Rock than not. And I think more people would say that having somebody like The Rock or a Steve Austin, a star from the past, on the show today, who can still go and who can still talk and who can still entertain, it elevates the show. But like I said, John Cena is the biggest star in the company. But if you line them up, Cena versus Rock, next to each other, it's just startling how, by comparison, how much of a bigger star The Rock is than John Cena. And Cena's been on top. I mean, Cena has been on top in WWE more years than Rock was when he was on top. I mean, Rock really didn't become a big star until late 98, 99. And really, by 2002, he was already pretty much gone. He was no longer a full-time star. So what is that, 5 years maybe? You know, Cena, for all intents and purposes, he's been a big star on top. He won his first world title in 05. So it's been 6 years. And really, you can even push that and say that he's been probably the biggest star in the company for a good 7 years. And he comes nowhere close to the kind of star that The Rock is. And I don't know. It just struck me watching that on Monday night. Anyway, Rock gave Michael Cole a people's elbow. He gave him a rock bottom. It was great because it took Cole off the rest of the show, and it gave us Jim fucking Ross, along with Jerry Lawler and Josh Matthews, who I didn't mind. And by the way, I think we can finally say that JR is back. Of course, I say this now. Watch, he won't be on TV tomorrow night. But even if he's not on Raw every week, they've eased Jim Ross seemingly into a role where he will appear on Raw at least every so often in the role that suits him best. And I could not be happier. You know, he sort of quietly assumed his old position, even if they still play musical chairs with the announcers every week. You know, and every now and then Ross will get beat up and he'll get replaced by Michael Cole midway through the show. Thankfully, that did not happen this past week. The bottom line is the guy is back on TV in the role that he loves. It's the role that suits him best. And I have to give Vince McMahon credit for it. I wish he would get his head out of his ass and just put him on there permanently. But, you know, Vince does not have to put Jim Ross on TV if he doesn't want to. And whatever his motivations or his intentions are, we saw Ross on TV Monday night. And I think he added a lot to the show. He really added a lot to it. We had Pitbull come out, who, for those of our international friends who may not know who he is one of the bigger recording artists right now in this country. And he got a great reaction from the crowd. I mean, a lot of times the fans will crap all over these live performances, but not Pitbull. I mean, these people loved him in Miami. He brought out the Miami Heat dancers. They performed a song. That was that. Throughout the show, we had a whole bunch of taped happy birthday messages for The Rock from a whole bunch of different celebrities, LeBron James and Dwayne Wade, Dan Marino, Samuel L. Jackson, Paul Walker, Ludacris, Steve Carell, Ellen DeGeneres, Regis Philbin, Kelly Ripa, Craig Ferguson, Jimmy Kimmel, George Lopez, and Tyler Perry. How you can put Tyler Perry in there with the rest of them, I don't know. That guy annoys the fuck out of me. Now, here's the other thing that was kind of talked about after the show. The lack of wrestling in the first hour. How does that compare to Impact? You know, first of all, there's been more than one episode of Impact in the past that you've had an entire hour go by with virtually no wrestling. And I remember there being one episode in particular last year that really, really, really pissed me off. I think they went a full 75 minutes without any wrestling at all. And I took them to task for it at the time. So I'm not going to give WWE a pass, because that wouldn't be fair. You know, I want to be fair with these criticisms. I would have liked, personally, a little more action in the first half of the show. I know why they did it. And first of all, I enjoyed this Raw show a lot more than any of those Impacts. Okay, so that's a leg up for WWE. At the end of the day, if you're going to have an hour go by with no wrestling, I'm probably not going to like that. But if it's entertaining in some way, or if it's moving forward like the main event storyline or whatever the case may be, I can give you a pass and say, you know what? I thought that was a lot of fun, so therefore I'm not going to bitch too much about it. So, and I'm not going to bitch too much about this. It was pretty entertaining, but we reached a point about 45 minutes in where I thought to myself, man, you know, we haven't had a match yet. What's going on here? I would have liked a little more action. By this point, I had watched almost a full 2 hours of WWE programming, if you count Tough Enough, without an actual wrestling match. Or as I like to call it, Mr. McMahon's Utopia. Let's see how many of you get that reference. Maryse and Kelly Kelly had the first official match on the show, which made me shudder. Although I always like seeing Maryse. It literally went 20 seconds. They did one move, and that brought out Karma, who made her Raw debut. They didn't waste any time, that's for sure. They certainly did not waste any time getting her out there. Like I said, her music, her entrance, it's really great stuff. They're making her out to be a real nutcase, which is similar to what they did very effectively with Mickie James when she first came into WWE, you may remember. I thought Mickie's gimmick at the beginning was great, and WrestleMania 22 probably will go down as the one WrestleMania that had the most anticipated, I guess you would say, women's match. I can't think of another WrestleMania show where you thought to yourself, one of the main attractions on the show that people were actually looking forward to was a Divas match, but WrestleMania 22, I was looking forward to seeing Trish Stratus and Mickie James because they built that story up so well between them, and then at some point, Mickie became normal. I guess they put her back on her meds, and she was just another diva, and I wish that they would do that more often with these women and give them their own personality. They seem to be doing that with Karma, which is a great thing. Unfortunately, the rumors are that she already has heat backstage and the other women on the roster are afraid to work with her for fear of getting injured, as Alicia Fox did at the SmackDown tapings on Tuesday. So I don't know what that means for Karma's future, but if another person gets hurt and it happens to be in a match or in an angle with Karma, you know Karma's going to get the blame whether it's her fault or not. And we've seen pushes before. We've seen people's pushes get derailed because of things like that in WWE, so hopefully that does not happen. Josh, on our Facebook page, made a very good point during the week that I didn't realize when I first watched these shows at the beginning of the week. Karma appears to be attacking heels so far. You know, on Raw Monday night, she spared Kelly Kelly. She beat up Michelle McCool and not Layla last Sunday. Maryse is the one who got beat up on Monday night. Alicia Fox, who I think is a heel, is the one who got beat up on SmackDown. Now, I did read where, I guess, at one of the house shows this weekend, Karma attacked Eve. But you know what? What they do on the house shows doesn't really count until we see it on TV. So as far as the TV stuff is concerned, Karma appears to only be attacking the heels so far. So I don't know if that's just a coincidence and they haven't even realized it, or if they're going somewhere with it. I assume they're going somewhere with it. Miz got his championship rematch against John Cena on Monday night, and they had a much better match than the one they had at WrestleMania. I mean, if this was the match they would have had at WrestleMania, maybe with a couple of extra minutes tacked onto it, I wouldn't be of the opinion that their match was among the worst WrestleMania main events of all time, which I still think it was. But this match was the complete opposite. You know, it's just amazing that this match was so much better than the one they had at WrestleMania. You know, the one that I paid $55 to see. It's just amazing how those things work. The fans were really into the near falls in this match, like to a ridiculous level. And what was even more ridiculous was on commentary, how they kept talking about how Cena was in, quote, enemy territory here in The Rock's hometown. And yet, Cena got almost no boos from this crowd. I mean, at least on television, it came across literally like 95% of the people in the building were actually cheering John Cena, which is the complete opposite of how it is in almost every other city in the country, which was quite baffling, to be honest. You know, but I guess we have to stick to the script, so he was in, quote, enemy territory on Monday night. They did the dusty finish in this match, only this time it was a heel and not the babyface getting screwed. Miz clocked Cena with the title, got the pin, but the referee went to retrieve the title from the ring announcer and realized it wasn't there. He turned around and saw Miz and Riley celebrating with it, and from this, he deduced that something was rotten in the state of Denmark, and he reversed the decision. So he gave John Cena the win by DQ. I presume this means we're getting another Miz-Cena match. That's what I thought coming out of the show on Monday, and apparently they're going to have an I Quit match, if the rumors are to be believed, at the Over the Limit pay-per-view. So another Cena versus Miz match. They had a great match on Monday, don't get me wrong, but Cena versus Miz at this point is played out. Sucks to be Alberto Del Rio, who was originally supposed to win the World Heavyweight title at WrestleMania before that got changed, and then he was going to win it from Edge at Extreme Rules, and then Edge retired, and they moved Del Rio over to Raw. So instead, Christian was booked to win the title and keep it on SmackDown. So now, Alberto finds himself seemingly back in a feud with Rey Mysterio, who was the first person he feuded with for many months when he came to WWE. Del Rio did commentary for a tag match at Pit. Mysterio and Kofi Kingston against Jack Swagger and Drew McIntyre. It was a pretty entertaining match. And what was quite entertaining was, while talking about how Rey was not a real Mexican, you know, he was a Chicano. This is what Del Rio was going off on commentary, because they kept saying, oh, you know, we've got two Mexicans on SmackDown, on Raw now, and Del Rio was adamant that, you know, Mysterio is not a real Mexican, which he's not. But I thought that was pretty funny. I think it was Josh Matthews. I took notes during the show on Monday, and I'm pretty sure it was Josh who had a really stupid line during this match about how Alberto was at ringside scouting his new opponents. He was scouting his new competition on Raw, which was completely ridiculous, because every single person in that tag team match was drafted over to Raw from SmackDown, the same brand that Del Rio was on. And one of them he feuded with for months, so I don't know how much more scouting he could possibly do. Anyway, this is a really good match. There were some backstage comedy skits throughout the show. There was a Zack Ryder cameo, for those of you who were watching closely enough, although he didn't speak. The Rock kissed Mae Young. We had the Great Khali, who was made to be such a big deal, you know, as a Raw guy coming over to SmackDown, and you know, he was even one of the people who came out on SmackDown this week expecting to challenge for the World Heavyweight Championship. And there he was on Raw, dressed up as the Tooth Fairy. And eventually we had Rock confronting John Cena. Cena told him that he brought a birthday gift for him, which was the WWE title. If he wanted it, he was going to have to go through him. The Rock told him to bring it, and that was the end of that. So the slow build continues to next year's WrestleMania main event, which I guess it's going to be a championship match. Again, Cena could easily drop the belt and get it back three different times between now and then, but I take it to mean that they wouldn't be hyping it as a title match unless they had every expectation of putting the title on the line. So that certainly ups the ante in that match. Kane and Mason Ryan. My God. You know, these guys came out about 5 minutes to 11, and this was, for all intents and purposes, this was our main event. Think about that. It only went about a minute, but it was every bit as bad as you figured it would be. I mean, clearly they're trying to position Ryan as the next big thing, and I think it's really, really telling that a guy as green as goose shit, in the immortal words of Bill DeMott, who is so obviously not ready to be on television, is getting a push like this when more talented and charismatic guys like Seth Rollins, the former Tyler Black from ROH, and Richie Steamboat toil away in Florida Championship Wrestling. I mean, some things never change. But Brian, anyway, left both Kane and Big Show laying. He left his Nexus counterparts at ringside as he walked to the back alone. CM Punk had a confused look on his face, as if to say, why the fuck haven't I left this place yet? Boy, was he an afterthought on this show. And so, anyway, Rock comes out to end the show. Of course, he was saluted by a clearly emotional Vince McMahon. They aired a tribute video that apparently The Rock did not know was coming to that. It was the Diddy song, I'm Coming Home, or whatever it is. I guess that'll be the WrestleMania theme next year. They had Maya, who is another recording artist, come out. She led the crowd in a stirring rendition of Happy Birthday. We got a shitload of pyro and confetti, and that's all she wrote. So, like I said, you either loved the show or you hated it. I just felt like, you know, I didn't expect Mick Foley, for example, to be on this show. I know why Foley wasn't there. I can't blame WWE for that, but they, you know, they were hyping up surprises, and I guess the surprises were Maya and Pitbull, and really, and they were fine, you know, and I actually thought Pitbull's performance was kind of fun, but who gives a shit? wrestling fans are not watching the show, and when they're told about surprises and people that are going to be making appearances, they don't give a fuck about Pitbull. You know, they don't give a fuck about seeing a taped message from Ellen DeGeneres. So it was a letdown for me. You know, the fact that they did this whole hoopla for The Rock, and the way the show ends is just him posing in the ring with confetti and balloons, and we're probably not going to see him again for, you know, several weeks or a couple more months. It didn't do much for me. It was fun at times. There were some good matches. Cena Miz was really good, but yeah, this show was definitely not among the best Raws of the year, in my opinion. Now, that brings me to SmackDown. And I got some stuff to say about this, as you might imagine. First of all, I read where Sean Daivari apparently got a tryout with an Arab gimmick during one of the dark matches. So if that's the case, you stay classy, Vince McMahon. I actually enjoyed the hell out of this show. I really, really like SmackDown, save for the end, which absolutely infuriated me. It wasn't a blowaway show, but it had really good wrestling. And, in fact, it was a much better show than Raw was. I don't see how anybody who watched Raw from start to finish and watched SmackDown from start to finish could possibly think that Raw was the better show. I don't know what you were watching if you thought that. I don't see how you can compare the two and think that, man, Raw was a much better show than SmackDown. Unless you're so blinded by rage over the outcome of the main event, which I understand completely, but don't let that change the fact that this was a damn good wrestling show. I laughed my ass off during the opening segment when Christian reminded Mark Henry that the World Heavyweight title was made out of gold and not chocolate. I thought that line was fantastic. Daniel Bryan and Sheamus had a solid 10 minutes to go out there and tear it up, and that's what they did. I mean, how nasty was that first brogue kick from the outside? My God. But they've got good chemistry together. The last match the two of them had on Raw sucked. But this match did not suck. This was very good. I wish they would have given Sin Cara and Tyson Kidd more than 2 minutes during their match. But for what it was real good. I wish they would get rid of that stupid blue light that they're using for Sin Cara matches. And they will, but, you know, it'll take them a while. I mean, they did that with Kane when he first came in and started wrestling. You remember all of Kane's matches were pretty much in pitch-black darkness with one red light on the ring. So now I guess they have a blue light for Sin Cara. I give it a couple of weeks, and then they'll probably do away with it. Looks like we're headed for a Sin Cara Chavo Guerrero program, which, you know, while Chavo bores the absolute hell out of me, I'm sure it'll make for a fantastic match, so I'm very much looking forward to that. And that brings me to the main event. Having had a chance to finally see this talked-about match with my own eyes from start to finish, let me say this. I loved this match. I thought Christian and Randy Orton had a fucking awesome 17-minute match on SmackDown. In fact, it may have been the best Randy Orton match I've seen in years. Years! I cannot remember a more recent Randy Orton match that was better than this. I mean, maybe it was the I Quit match or submission match. I think it was a submission match between Cena and Orton at the Breaking Point pay-per-view a year and a half ago, maybe. I remember that match was pretty good, but this was the best Orton match I've seen in a long-ass time. That mid-air RKO they used at the finish of the match was just a thing of beauty. Having said that, I still hated this finish. Now, keep in mind here, the original booking plan was for Alberto Del Rio to be the one to win the championship at the pay-per-view, and then he would drop it to Randy Orton 2 days later on TV. So instead of it being Del Rio, it was Christian. And that was a very big mistake on WWE's part. I've said before that Christian is a great babyface, which he is, but he's an even better heel. And God knows that SmackDown needs more heels. They really do. And if that's where this is going, and I can guarantee that it is. I can guarantee this ends with a Christian heel turn, possibly as early as this week. Then I support it, even though it's almost identical to the angle they did with R-Truth on Raw, but nonetheless. However, that does not change the fact that it was disgusting of WWE to take the title off him so quickly. They gave him and his fans a feel-good moment at the pay-per-view, and I've said before that Vince McMahon does not see Christian as a real main event guy. But he deserved a chance, especially at a time when the rosters are so incredibly thin. You know, it's not like the Raw and SmackDown rosters are overflowing with main event talent. Quite the opposite. Now, since he lost the title, he has a rematch clause, so I assume we're going to get a rematch at Over the Limit. I don't know that for sure, but I assume that's where they're going with this. And if he doesn't turn heel this week, perhaps by the pay-per-view, he will. By the way, this has nothing to do, what happened on SmackDown has nothing to do with the fact that Christian went to TNA all those years ago. I saw some people, I think maybe it was on my Facebook page, commenting about this. Let's put this shit to bed once and for all. We already know what Vince McMahon thought about Christian because before he ever left WWE. He had a conversation with Christian where he basically told him, you're not main event material. That's why he left in the first place. Plus, he's been back in WWE for how long now since he came back? 2-3 years? This was not punishment for going to TNA. I hardly think putting this guy in a pay-per-view main event and giving him the world title, even if it was only for 2 days, is hardly a punishment. So let's just put that shit to bed once and for all. There's no truth to that at all. WWE apparently was taken aback. I mean, they were gobsmacked by just the vicious backlash from fans online after the spoilers got out on Tuesday. They were not expecting it to be so strong. And supposedly, they've taken notice of this. So we'll see if perhaps this changes their perception of Christian as a main eventer. In the end, it could work to Christian's advantage. I'm not going to give them the benefit of the doubt, though. Not on this. I have no faith whatsoever that it's going to change a goddamn thing. Even if Christian wrestles Randy Orton for the next 3 months in main events, you know exactly where he's going to be when it's over. He's going to be right back down to where he was before. On Twitter during the week, Chris Jericho actually piped in on this whole controversy, and he said, everyone bitching about Christian losing the title, have you ever thought that maybe it's just the beginning of a bigger storyline? That's what Jericho said. Well, why, yes, Chris, I have thought about that. And you're right. Maybe it is the start of something bigger. I'm sure that we have not seen the last of Christian versus Randy Orton, which is a win-win for us because they had a fantastic match on SmackDown this week. I'm sure their matches in the future will be every bit as good. Okay, so you're right about that. Absolutely. But, Christ on a cracker, you still don't take the fucking title off the guy 2 days later. I mean, for fuck's sake, they even let the Great Khali hold the title for longer than that. He had it for a couple of months. I mean, you know, when you have a heel win the championship only to drop it quickly without ever having a chance to successfully defend it, you can excuse it to some degree because they're a heel. Think Yokozuna at WrestleMania 9, winning the title and dropping it 2 minutes later to Hulk Hogan. Okay, or Kane beating Steve Austin to the 98 King of the Ring and then dropping it back to him the next night on Raw, which was done strictly to pop a rating. A babyface that people are behind, you can't just do that without making the guy look like a goof. I mean, I guess the closest thing I could think of is Mankind, winning the title at SummerSlam in 99 and losing it the next night to Triple H, but that was a completely different scenario. You know, Foley was already an established main event guy at that point with 2 titles under his belt, and it was common knowledge that the title was going to Hunter regardless. Plus, Foley lost to a heel who did dastardly things to win and had help from outside interference. Not the case here. Christian was the big babyface who had the championship win at the pay-per-view that was very emotional. He got a huge response from the crowd. He came out the very next time on his show and lost the title clean as a sheet to Randy Orton in the main event, showing that Randy Orton is, in fact, better than Christian. And all those people that perhaps started to get behind the guy are just completely deflated. They're angry, they're upset, for good reason. So, you know, when I first heard that this happened, I didn't believe it at first. I actually got a text message from Noah Mark, who was in attendance at the tapings, and sent me a text message saying that Orton had beaten Christian to win the title. And my first reaction to this was one of disbelief. And then when reality set in and I realized they actually did this, I was angry. I was as angry as anybody else. And I said, you know what? I'm not gonna go and say anything about this until I've had a chance to watch the match. And like I said before, I've had a chance to watch. I watched the entire show, which doesn't always happen. I'm not always around on Friday nights to see SmackDown. I watched the show. I really liked what I saw. The main event was awesome. It was the best wrestling match on any wrestling show this week and probably in many weeks. And it was great stuff, and I hope to see more. I think if nothing else, this pretty much guarantees that Christian will be in the main event picture for at least the next month, even if he doesn't get the belt back, which he might, especially after the reaction that he got to his title loss. But to me, it was embarrassing. It was disgusting. It was shameful. He deserved better than that. Go watch that crowd reaction when he won the championship. I understand they have plans that they want to stick to, but sometimes, goddammit, you got to deviate from those plans. You have to do what I've talked about before. Call an audible. Give the guy a chance. What have you got to lose? What do you have to lose? Absolutely nothing, but they just could not help themselves, and they had to get the belt off him as quickly as possible, because God forbid people find out that Christian is world champion of our company. I mean, it could mean doom for WWE. You know, CeeLo Green has a song called Fuck You, and I think that's appropriate for WWE this week. Now that I got myself all amped up, let me move on to Impact. This seems like the perfect time to talk about this show. First, a quick word about the end of Impact this week. With the whole spray-painted car thing, you know, Eric Bischoff and Hulk Hogan have been pondering now for weeks who this network representative is. There's a representative from the network that's fucking with Immortal, and they can't figure out who it is. They've teased that it's a guy, it's a girl. And anyway, Hogan and Bischoff at the end of the show are walking to Hogan's car. And the car has been graffitied with the words, "You're next," on the driver's side of the car. And Hogan and Bischoff tease that Bill Goldberg is the network rep. They're going crazy. It's Goldberg. It's Goldberg. And they drive away. Now, unless Goldberg is coming into the company, which he's not, that's pretty stupid. Why would you tease Bill Goldberg? And I know this is TNA, and so because they said Goldberg, you should expect a swerve, which is what you're going to get. But why even mention that? Goldberg is one of the biggest names in the history of the business. If he came back today, he probably would still have some value left to him. He'd be the biggest star in TNA if they ever got him. Why would you tease that when in the end, you're not going to deliver? I will say this. I did enjoy the main event. It was Kurt Angle and Velvet Sky against Jeff Jarrett and Karen Angle. And for the times that Kurt and Jeff were in there, which was limited, but when they were on their game. Kurt Angle and Jeff Jarrett have great chemistry in the ring, and I enjoyed it. I will give them credit. I really did enjoy, at least when they were in the ring. I thought it was good stuff. And this brings me now to Impact for this upcoming week. This is for the May 12th episode of Impact. So, if you don't want to hear any spoilers for the show coming up this Thursday, this is a warning, skip ahead. Because I'm going to talk about spoilers. If you don't want to hear it, skip ahead. Okay. Now, I'm sure by now many of you have heard about this apparent name change. People wondering, well, is TNA now dead? Is there a new name for the company? Is it a new name for the TV show? It is not a new name for the company. Which is not to say that TNA won't change their name at some point, but TNA is still TNA. What has changed is the name of the show. It's no longer TNA Impact. The show is now called Impact Wrestling. They are rebranding the show to emphasize wrestling, apparently, since WWE does not want to. So, I appreciate the idea. Certainly, I think, as a wrestling fan, I think, in theory, that's a great idea. But I have absolutely no faith and trust in this company at all. Just like WWE. As long as TNA has Vince Russo writing their shows, I refuse to believe, they can call it whatever they want, I refuse to believe that their television show, all of a sudden, is going to place this great emphasis on pro wrestling. I refuse to believe it. But that's the new name of the show. Now, on the May 12th episode of Impact, who should be revealed as the network's official consultant? Mick Foley. Mick Foley, not Bill Goldberg. Mick Foley. Eric Bischoff, Ric Flair, Hulk Hogan all came out. Hogan demanded the network rep, who was promised to appear, come to the ring. It was Mick Foley. Foley said that Hogan conned his way into running the company, but the network has been paying attention. Hogan may run TNA, but the network is adding a, quote, new promotion to its schedule, Impact Wrestling. The show is all about wrestling, he says. He announced a 25-man battle royal with the winner facing Sting for the title at the next pay-per-view, which turned out to be Mr. Anderson. Mr. fucking Anderson. against Sting for the championship. Not the match I would have made, but hey, that's what TNA wants to do. Fine. But that's not even the worst of it. Oh, no. That is not the worst of it at all. Because, you see, Kurt Angle has been teasing that he's bringing in somebody. He's bringing in a lady who's going to take out his ex-wife, who's going to assist him in this war against Jeff and Karen Jarrett. So, who should this person be? Why, of course, it's Chyna. Chyna debuts on Impact this upcoming week. She will team with Kurt Angle at Sacrifice against Jeff and Karen. This, mind you, from the same company that continues to employ and still hopes to push Jeff Hardy. Amazing. Amazing. Here is a woman who is a known basket case. She has had well-documented substance abuse issues. She doesn't even have the same physique that she once had that got her over in the first place, which, for her own health, I'm sure is a very good thing, because we could all speculate how she got that, you know, physique to begin with. But she was a star in WWE. That's all you need to tell these people in TNA. If you were a star in WWE, you're in. Now, the topper to all of this, as if that wasn't bad enough, the topper to all of this comes from TMZ, which reported on Thursday that Chyna does not even have a signed written contract with TNA. She is working on a, quote, good faith deal with the company. TMZ says it's a handshake deal with a very, very short leash. Well, that's nice. Here's some advice, by the way, some friendly advice from me to wrestling promoters out there, if you're listening to this show. If you're thinking of bringing somebody into your locker room and have to place them on a really short leash, don't bother bringing them in. I don't know what else to say. I really don't know what else to say. You know, the Jeff Hardy situation was bad enough. Chyna is a nut job. Plain and simple. I haven't heard too many stories about her of late. Maybe she's cleaned up her act. Maybe she has. For her sake, I hope she has. But this is also the same company that brought Scott Hall in a whole bunch of times. And Scott Hall, and by the way, I haven't heard any new updates on Scott Hall. I guess no news is good news. But long before Scott Hall hit rock bottom as he did in the last several weeks, Scott Hall's been a mess for a long time. But TNA never had a problem bringing him into the company more than once. So from the company that did all of that, they bring you Chyna. And will promote her for a pay-per-view match without even having, according to TMZ, a written contract. Wow. Well, I guess I shouldn't be surprised. I mean, you know, Dixie Carter let Kevin Nash out of his TNA contract. A contract, mind you, he had signed an extension or a new contract with the company. And Dixie Carter just let him go. And what ended up happening? He showed up at the Royal Rumble. This really should not surprise me, but it does. I don't know why. We'll see how it plays out on TV. You know, like I said, this is the spoilers for the show coming up this upcoming Thursday. So there's clips of Chyna making her entrance on Impact. We'll see what it looks like when it's actually post-produced on TV on Spike. But I just shake my head. I just shake my head. Shane Helms and his girlfriend Karen were involved in a serious motorcycle accident on Thursday near their home in North Carolina. Helms suffered apparently a broken ankle, a broken nose, and a broken jaw. So some pretty significant injuries. His girlfriend suffered a broken neck, which is incredible. Thankfully, there was no spinal damage. But still, a broken neck is a broken neck. On Twitter, Matt Hardy posted a video a couple of days ago saying that both were expected to be okay. And I noticed that either earlier today or yesterday, Shane Helms posted on his Twitter, finally, for the first time in many days, he posted two pictures of himself and his girlfriend in the hospital. And, you know, he just shows his face. But his face is, he ain't looking too good. It's very swollen. He's got really bad cuts and lacerations and stitches in his face. And, I've talked about Shane Helms before and all the stuff with him and Shawn Michaels, if you go back all those weeks. But, you know, this trumps all of that. Nobody wants to see somebody else get hurt. And certainly best wishes to both of them for a speedy recovery. Hopefully they'll be able to get past this and all will be well and there won't be any permanent injuries as a result of this accident. On a lighter note, Chris Jericho was on Attack of the Four. Attack of the Show on G4. G4 is the network. Attack of the Show is the name of the show. And he appeared as Thor. Now, Thor, of course, is in movies this weekend, and Jericho appeared as the comic book character. He looked just like him. They dressed him up in the helmet, and they put the beard on him, and he was awesome. He was awesome. I'm sure most of you have already seen it by now. If you haven't, you must go out of your way to watch it. I say that when he returns to WWE, since he always wants to reinvent himself and never come back as the same character, I would love to see him come back with this gimmick. Can you imagine that? They got the rights from Marvel to do it. If Jericho just randomly showed up on Raw one day dressed up as Thor with that accent, I would piss myself. Knowing WWE, they'd probably have Chris Jericho dressed up as Thor take the title from Christian again, so wouldn't put it past them. I finally saw Fast Five this weekend, and I really enjoyed it. The Rock was great in his role. His interaction with Vin Diesel felt special. Rock did seem to me to have some sort of gland problem, as he was sweating like a pig in almost every scene. I'm not sure what that was all about, but that aside, it's a perfectly enjoyable, check your brain at the door and enjoy some kick-ass action type of movie. And a word of advice, don't leave right away if you do see the movie. Stay through about half the credits at the end for a spoiler tease for the next movie. So thumbs up on Fast Five. I very much enjoyed it. And I noticed, I don't know how many people picked up on this, but in the theater that I saw the movie in, they showed a couple of trailers before. And one of the trailers they showed, and I cannot remember now the name of the movie, but it was for a movie. It was almost like an MMA movie. The story about this guy that has to fight for a living, fight for his family, become a fighter, whatever. I think he fights his brother. That's like the big story of the movie. Anyway, I noticed when they showed the trailer for this fight film that Kurt Angle is in the film. They show him in about two or three different scenes. In one scene, he's dressed in a suit coming out of a limo, and another, he's a fighter. So I presume in this movie, Kurt Angle is an MMA fighter. So if that's the case, then congratulations to Kurt. He gets to live out his dream of being an MMA fighter without actually taking a real punch. And he's actually in a real feature film instead of the usual low-budget, straight-to-DVD bullshit that he does. So I noticed him right away. So Kurt Angle is apparently in that movie. And again, I forgot the name of it, but I think it has Nick Nolte is in the movie. So you might want to check that out. All right, so last week I asked you to send stories to me about when you became a wrestling fan, your earliest memories of wrestling, or what caused you, or who caused you to become a fan. And I got a lot of emails from people. I'm going to try to get to all of them, and the ones I don't get to, I'll try to get to next week. But I got a lot of good stuff from you guys. You can still send me those emails, by the way, to thesolomonster@gmail.com. You can send me those emails, and as I continue to get them, I will read them on the air. When did you first become a wrestling fan, and why? What's your earliest memory? I'd love to hear from you. So let's start out here with my buddy James Alexander writes in. Says, holy shit, someone finally asked the million-dollar question. When did I become a true wrestling fan? The answer is the 1996 Royal Rumble. It's not the first time I saw wrestling, but nonetheless, I was invited to the apartment of a family friend in his late 60s to watch the pay-per-view. And, in fact, I was hooked for life from the Razor Ramon Goldust Intercontinental title bout with interference from the 1-2-3 Kid. When that occurred, I broke one of the old man's precious plastic cups. Well, that sucks. The real hook came when a young man by the name of Shawn Michaels came in the Rumble against all odds and won it for the second straight year. Became my favorite all-time wrestler to this day and the reason I got into the business. Then came the main event where Bret Hart battled, actually, The Undertaker, and James had a little bit of a brain fart here, and he mentioned it was Diesel in a steel cage. That came the month after. But anyway, the Royal Rumble 1996, apparently, is what turned James into a hardcore, diehard wrestling fan and convinced him to get into the business. And I just want to give a quick plug also for he works for WUW, which is the World of Unpredictable Wrestling. I've mentioned them before. Johnny Rods, WWE Hall of Famer, runs that promotion in Brooklyn, New York. And they're having their May Day in May show coming up on May 28th at the world-famous Gleason's Gym in Brooklyn, New York, 77 Front Street. So if you're in the area, or even if you're not, go by and check out the WUW card. Should be a good time. I've been to a few shows in the past. I haven't been to one in a while. I really got to get back there. But always a good time at those shows when you really get to see these guys in there learning their craft and put on some kick-ass matches. So go out and support WUW on the 28th. And thank you, James, for the email. Got an email here from Bear. Doesn't really specify if it's Yogi Bear or Black Bear, but just Bear. It's odd how well I remember when I first became a wrestling fan. I can close my eyes and hear everything like it's happening all over again. It was only 4 summers ago, and my mother had just gotten into pro wrestling because some of her coworkers got into it. So this Monday night in particular, her and my brother, along with myself, sat down to watch Raw. Mr. Kennedy came out and was blaming the fans for him not being able to cash in Money in the Bank, only to have John Cena come out and interrupt him. Cena was saying he couldn't remember Kennedy's name, and after a while I said, I remember now, it's Mr. Cameltoe. Looking back on it, it's probably a bit cheesy, I would say so. But at the time it was hilarious to a high school sophomore, and now I'm looking at training to become a pro wrestler after I finish college. Who knows, maybe one day I'll be enough of a star to do an interview on The Sound Off. Well, I'll make you a promise, if you become a big star on TV, I will have you on The Sound Off. So, there you go. This one comes from Mark. The first thing I remember seeing a... By the way, the name Mark is so funny for a wrestling fan for obvious reasons. The first thing I remember seeing as a wrestling fan was a monster Big Show smashing the windows of a car and then proceeding to tip the car over. Can you remember when this might have been? I know it had been in the early to mid-2000s, but I can't remember the year. Also, there was a diva yelling for him to stop. I'm pretty sure that was on an episode of SmackDown when he overturned the car. Unless I'm thinking about Mark Henry, but I think Big Show did that once too, and I'm pretty sure it was on SmackDown. Probably, like you said, around 2002, 2003, somewhere around there. Got an email from Walter. Hey, Solomonster, absolutely love the show. It's great hearing a longtime fan intelligently express his opinions on pro wrestling. That's right, I said it. Vince, strike me down where I stand. My very first memories of pro wrestling have to go back to when I was just a little kid. However, not in a way that most kids became a fan. For some reason, as a child, I always liked Hulk Hogan. I don't really remember why. I must have seen a commercial of him or something from before I can remember. I'd often rent Mr. Nanny from the local video store and thought it was hilarious when I was little. Well, it was hilarious, just for different reasons. You see, my parents never allowed me to watch wrestling. When it became hot in the late 90s, I'd go to school and constantly see my classmates with WCW or WWF t-shirts and hear them perpetually babble about what had happened the night before on Raw and Nitro. I can even recall one time when I was flipping through the channels and Nitro came on. Hollywood Hogan made his entrance, followed by Goldberg. My mom came in and shut it off. Then she made me go to bed. Well, that's not right. Eventually, I started to just ignore the chatter and went on not thinking too much about pro wrestling until several years later. Right before WrestleMania 18 in 2002, my little cousin had started watching and became a big fan of The Rock. He put it on one day at a family party, and the video package for Ric Flair vs. The Undertaker came on. As he often reminds me, after the package, I pointed to Ric Flair and said, I want that guy to win. I was 13 years old then, and have been hooked ever since. I started sneaking to watch Raw and SmackDown, and my parents just finally gave up after a while. 2002 is still probably my favorite year in wrestling since I started watching, because I got to see my top two favorites of all time, Hulk Hogan and Shawn Michaels, win huge comeback championships. Little did I know that neither of them would touch a world title ever again. So, against all odds, I became a late bloomer, and at its best moments, WWE will always make me feel like that 13-year-old kid again. Well, that was a pretty cool letter. Thank you, Walter. Zane from New Jersey. I was listening to Sound Off 157 when you asked the question, when was your first wrestling memory? According to my mom, when I was a baby and was crying, my parents were clicking through the channels, and when they got to what I believe must have been a WWE Saturday Night's Main Event, since Raw was not around in 1992, I stopped crying. So whenever I would cry, my mom put on wrestling, and I have been a diehard fan ever since, hoping one day to work for their TV production staff. Keep up the good work. Well, it's kind of funny you mention that, because these days, most wrestling shows would actually make people cry. Trust writes into the podcast, this is in response to your last Sound Off. I'm probably one of the newer wrestling fans. I became a fan at the end of 2005 after watching Randy Orton versus The Undertaker inside Hell in a Cell at Armageddon. Probably why it stuck as one of my favorite pay-per-view names. My first Mania was WrestleMania 23, All Grown Up. Brian writes in, I started watching wrestling back in 2003. I was 10 and in 5th grade. I had just gone back to school after brain surgery. And there was this girl I really liked, and I wanted something in common with her, and she happened to be a big wrestling fan, so I decided to start watching it. And I believe the first show I saw was SmackDown back when it was on Thursday nights. I remember going to school and talking to her about it and saying that Jeff Hardy was a freak of nature because of his rainbow-dyed hair, how true it would become. And after that, I just got hooked. I remember watching Raw all the time and hating Bischoff and arguing with friends about how it was real. And there was, and they're stupid because they don't watch. Looking back, my oh my, how dumb I was. Well, you weren't dumb, you were just naive. We all are naive at one point or another. It's okay. Justin Erickson writes in, "Hey, Solo Monster, been listening to the Sound Off since an episode somewhere in the 60s. I took an interesting path to become a wrestling fan. I'm 21 now, and I've only been a fan since early 09. The Royal Rumble that year was my first pay-per-view. During the summer of 08, my friend had me play his SmackDown vs. Raw video game, which I enjoyed very much, and I thought the concept of everything was really cool, so I asked him more about WWE. He told me about some of the wrestlers. The following week, I watched Raw, which happened to be the 2008 draft. Needless to say, I was confused as hell about everything that was going on. The only things I remember from the show were when Jim Ross got drafted to SmackDown and when Vince McMahon got injured at the end of the show. Because I had no idea what was going on, I didn't watch another episode for quite some time. Fast forward to January of 09, and I found myself on the couch sick one day. I was flipping through channels and saw SmackDown. I couldn't find anything else to watch, so I decided to watch that. This show caught my attention. I watched both Raw and SmackDown intently for weeks to come. I remember my first feud being Edge versus Jeff Hardy and JBL employing Shawn Michaels. I was hooked. I feel like getting into wrestling so late makes me a different kind of wrestling fan. I never watched it believing it was real, and since I'm a relatively new fan, I don't have an Attitude Era to really compare things to. Sure, once I became a fan, I did my research, and I could tell you a lot about what happened in the 90s and the 2000s, but I never witnessed it firsthand. I think this all makes me enjoy the current product more than the average viewer of my age." And you know what? That is a very good point that Justin makes. You have a lot of young people who either were born in the last 10 years, or maybe they're a little bit older, but they only got into wrestling, let's say, in the last 5 years, who don't have that frame of reference that you and I have. You know, they weren't around for, you know, the cartoon era of the WWF in the 80s. They weren't around for the wrestling boom of the late 90s and the Monday Night Wars and all of that stuff, which was in some ways wrestling at its worst, but it was also wrestling at its best and most fun and exciting. And when you take that frame of reference away, if you're somebody who, you know, your first pay-per-view is the Royal Rumble 3 years ago, you know, your perspective on things is going to be very different from mine, or very different from a lot of fans. And I think that's an important thing to keep in mind, you know, when sometimes we wonder, well, how can anybody actually think the current product is good or is really fun and exciting? And many times it's not, let's be honest. But the perspective there is, well, there are fans that don't know anything else. They don't know any other kind of wrestling except what they're seeing. And if they enjoy what they're seeing, they're going to think it's great. So I just thought that was interesting. So keep sending me those emails. When did you first become a wrestling fan? You know, how'd you get into it? Was it an accident? Did you used to be a wrestling fan and fell out of it but came back? Whatever the case may be, email me. And if I get enough responses, there were a few I didn't get to here, I'll get to the other stories next week. But right now there's other questions from the mailbag here that I'd like to tend to, so let's get into that. Got a message here that actually was sent probably about a week and a half ago. Somebody was watching the UFC prelims on Spike TV and wondering if WWE should consider doing a prelim show. And as I mentioned in response, you know, I've advocated doing some sort of pre-show and post-show, even with, you know, with whatever pay-per-view time is remaining at the end of a pay-per-view, for a long time now. You can have a prelim match or two, but it's not even necessary. I mean, I would do it more as an NFL pre-show type of show, rather, with, or maybe like roundtable analysis and a preview of the card, do some interviews with some of the wrestlers before the show so they can do that one last big sell for the pay-per-view. I think that would be a fantastic idea. I don't know why they don't do it already. Chris writes in, was listening to Sound Off 157, where when I mentioned that WrestleMania 17 did 950,000 buys, not knowing if it was national or international. He mentions that during one of the first matches, Jim Ross is naming all the countries the show is being seen in, and says that in the UK, where Chris lives, it was airing on Sky Sports, which is not a pay-per-view channel. So it seems they were not charging for it in the UK. Maybe this, if WrestleMania was on Sky Box Office, which is our pay-per-view provider, then WrestleMania 17 would have broken the 1 million buys mark. It may well have broken the 1 million buys mark because I went back and checked, and apparently the 950,000 buys were domestic, which means it's pretty much you're talking North America only, which to do almost a million buys just in North America, those truly are days gone by in wrestling. I mean, UFC can pull it off every now and then. They've actually broken the million-dollar barrier, or rather the million-buy barrier a couple of different times. To think that a WWE show in 2011, you know, could do 950,000 buys domestic is unheard of. It just doesn't happen anymore, unfortunately. But WrestleMania 17 sure did. It was obviously one of the greatest WrestleManias of all time. Got a message from Luis, who wrote in. He's been a listener since between episode 1 and 5. Big fan of the podcast. Do I think that having pay-per-view events for Raw and SmackDown individually will help put over talent and make feuds a bit more meaningful? I remember back when the events used to be like this, and there were way more feuds between the mid-card talent and tag teams than there are now. This seemed like a good idea in the past, and I think it could be done again to give more meaning to all the talent on the roster. What are your thoughts? Going back to Raw and SmackDown-only pay-per-views would be a disaster. I mean, can you imagine what a SmackDown pay-per-view would look like after this draft? Would you pay $50 to see Randy Orton, Sin Cara, Daniel Bryan, Mark Henry, Christian, and Kane? And not taking anything away from Christian or Daniel Bryan or anybody, but you can't do it. You just don't have enough depth to the roster to pull it off like you did 7 or 8 years ago. I mean, if they had more stars to go around, then yes, but their roster is so thin on real stars right now that they simply cannot afford to do it. So I just think it would be a disaster to even attempt that. Edwin writes in, who came up with the WWE wrestling style? And how did Vince come to the decision of picking it? Also, is it entertainment style now? What do you call it? Also, when is the next live sound off? Well, I can't pinpoint exactly what year it happened, but it was in the early 2000s, probably around 02 or 03, when WWE adopted their so-called safe style. I would imagine it was the result of so many top guys suffering injuries in a short period of time. You know, you had guys like Steve Austin, Chris Benoit, Rhino, Edge, Lita. They all had spinal fusion surgery, and others were suffering various muscle tears and such. You know, the hard and fast style of the Attitude Era, and all the TLC matches and all of that stuff. It was fun to watch, but it also shortened many careers in the process. As for a live sound off, there's never been a live sound off before, though I have hosted or co-hosted over 40 live shows for SCScoops.com in the past, many of which with my buddy Noah Mark. We stopped doing them pretty regularly some time ago, but we still do them every now and again. So, you know, hey, you never know. Chris Foster writes into the show, I have two questions that both deal with SummerSlam. The first one is, would you happen to know what's being booked for this year's SummerSlam? I've heard about Cena and Del Rio, and perhaps Triple H and The Undertaker. My second question is, what are your top three SummerSlam pay-per-views and why? I myself like SummerSlam 1997, heart and soul. Cena and Del Rio for the title was the original plan for SummerSlam. It still might be, but with Cena getting the belt now, it makes me wonder if they would bump that match up a couple of months, much the way they bumped the draft up by a couple of months. Triple H versus The Undertaker is not happening at WrestleMania next year, so if they're going to do a rematch, SummerSlam would be the place to do it, and Hunter can get his win back, and obviously it sounds like Undertaker may only have, you know, one more really big match left in him, and if that's the case, then it won't be until WrestleMania. We'll see how that shakes out. But, you know, other than that, the only thing I've heard is that WWE wants The Rock for SummerSlam, and they want him for Survivor Series as well to help continue the John Cena storyline. Selfishly, I hope he appears, at least at the Survivor Series, since the pay-per-view is being held at Madison Square Garden, and I hope to attend in person. So if I had to pick one over the other, I would prefer The Rock at Survivor Series, but they want him at SummerSlam. Not to wrestle, obviously, but they want him there in some capacity. That's all I know. As for my favorite SummerSlam pay-per-views, I'd have to go with, from earliest to latest, I'd have to go with SummerSlam 89, which I was younger at the time, but I look back at SummerSlam 89, and there was a damn good Intercontinental Championship match on that show between The Ultimate Warrior and Ravishing Rick Rude. It was much better than their WrestleMania 5 match. and one of the better Ultimate Warrior matches. Just a really great match. And the main event was Hulk Hogan and Brutus the Barber Beefcake against the Macho King Randy Savage and Zeus, which on the surface would make you think, wow, that match must have sucked. In fact, it did not suck. And I've gone back and watched it even as I'm now older. And it's actually, believe it or not, a really fun match. It really was. It was a fun tag team main event. It's not the sort of match you could ever do, you know, in 2011. You can't have a pay-per-view tag team main event. People won't buy it. But at the time, it was a fantastic match. And looking back, it kind of holds up a little bit. You know, it was just a really fun match. So, if I remember correctly, there was also a really good tag team match at the beginning of the show, I believe, between the Hart Foundation and the Brainbusters. So SummerSlam 89 is on my list. SummerSlam 1991 is my all-time favorite SummerSlam show. It was at Madison Square Garden. I was not there. But you have the classic Intercontinental Championship match between Bret Hart and Mr. Perfect. You have Virgil beating the Million Dollar Man for the Million Dollar Belt. Still to this day, the only person to beat DiBiase for the championship. LOD winning the tag team titles from the Nasty Boys. It was pretty quick and painless. Big pop for the LOD win. The main event actually didn't do much for me. It was the main event match was Hulk Hogan and the Ultimate Warrior against Sergeant Slaughter, General Adnan, and Colonel Mustafa with Psycho Sid, who at the time was Sid Justice as the guest referee. Not a big fan of that match, but the wedding ceremony with Macho Man and Elizabeth was, you know, it was good for what it was. There were no run-ins. It was pretty much as real of a fake wedding as you could possibly have. And I just remember there was a great video. It was the very first time we heard that particular music. We've heard them use this music in other wedding ceremonies in WWE. It was that song Together, I believe it's called. It was on the WWF Anthology CD they released many years ago. I have fond memories of the end of that pay-per-view, but some of the matches on that show were just great. Virgil beating DiBiase was just, it was a real feel-good moment. And, you know, a big payoff to an angle that went on for many years. You know, Virgil was brought in to be DiBiase's bodyguard in late 87, mid to late 87. And they were together for many years until Virgil finally broke free and would no longer take DiBiase's abuse at the Royal Rumble that year. They had their first match at WrestleMania, which wasn't all that great. SummerSlam was the big payoff with the title on the line, the Million Dollar Belt. And Virgil won it, got a big response from the crowd. But the Bret Hart Mr. Perfect match, and I've seen the two of them have a better match at the King of the Ring a couple years later, but it was just, I mean, it doesn't get better than that. It really, it just does not get any better than that ending sequence where Mr. Perfect drops a leg on Bret Hart's groin. He actually does it twice. The second time when he drops the leg, Bret Hart catches Mr. Perfect's leg. Now, mind you, they're laying flat on the mat, and Bret grabs the leg, folds the leg over. So basically, it's the only time I've ever seen Bret Hart apply the sharpshooter from a horizontal position. And he turns Mr. Perfect over, gets him in the sharpshooter. The only thing I would change about this, Perfect tapped way too quickly. I know he had a bad back. Maybe he was in some legit pain and couldn't wait to get out of there. But it was literally a situation where when Bret Hart had the legs finally hooked and he got up to go sit back and perform the hold, Perfect had already tapped out. That's how quick it was. I would have had him hold on for at least 3 or 4 seconds, but it's a minor nitpick. It's a great match. It's my all-time favorite SummerSlam. The other SummerSlam show I would probably throw on that list is 1998, which also, just a coincidence, happened to be from Madison Square Garden. I remember the build-up, the promotion, the hype for this SummerSlam being among the best I've ever seen for a SummerSlam show. On the go-home edition of Raw that week, they played that fantastic music video, Highway to Hell. Highway to Hell, AC/DC song, was the theme song for SummerSlam that year. And I had never seen them come up with a theme song and put together a video package like that and really go balls to the wall promoting a SummerSlam show like a WrestleMania show. I had never seen it before. And Austin vs. Undertaker to me was a disappointment. That show was all about The Rock and Triple H. They went out there. They were supposed to have about a 13 or 14 minute ladder match for the Intercontinental Championship. And I believe they were being told towards the end, wrap it up. And they basically said, fuck off. You know, we're having a great match. We're going to keep this thing going. It ended up going, I think, 27 minutes. It was a great ladder match. Triple H pulled the belt down. The place went apeshit. Unfortunately, Triple H legit hurt his knee in the match and needed surgery. And I don't think he ever defended the Intercontinental title. I think he had to give it up. And that's when, if I remember correctly, I believe Ken Shamrock won the belt, beating X-Pac in the finals on Raw. And the reason I remember that, it was October 12th, as a matter of fact, 1998, because I was at that Raw show. It was at the Nassau Coliseum. That was the night that the Big Boss Man came back to WWE. So there's a little history lesson for you. Antonio writes in, "Dear Solomonster, was the WWE really celebrating The Rock's birthday on Monday, or the million-plus pay-per-view buys that he got for WrestleMania?" That's a good question. I'm sure that they were celebrating a little bit of both that night. He says, "Always enjoy the sound off. Who are some of your influences as far as radio / reporting? I hear a little bit of Howard Stern in your podcast, and I mean that in a positive way." Well, first, I don't really have any radio influences. You know, I don't try to intentionally pattern myself after anybody. And as far as Howard Stern is concerned, I'm a fan of him. You know, I'm a fan of Howard Stern. The thing about it is, when he went to Sirius Satellite Radio, for all intents and purposes, I had to stop listening because I didn't have satellite radio. I still don't have satellite radio. You know, my friend who does and is a huge Stern fanatic will give me updates whenever something big happens on the show. And I try to check in every now and then just to find out if there's any updates on Artie Lang, who I think is... I think he's sorely missing from the show. My friend says that the show has kind of moved on without him, but which I think is a shame. But no, I'm a fan of Howard. I just really don't listen to him much anymore because I just don't. I can't. I don't have access to a show when it was on terrestrial radio. Many times I had an FM receiver, I guess, on my old MP3 player, and on the bus ride into work each morning, I would listen to a good hunk of his show. And unfortunately, when he went to satellite radio, which I mean, God, by now, it was probably 5-6 years ago. I have not heard much of him since. But so I wouldn't call him an influence, but am I a fan of his show? Yeah, I'd say I'm a fan of his show. In fact, I'll give you a good hey now, for good measure. Only Stern fans will get that. Richard from New York writes in, "I've been listening to the Sound Off since episode 38. I follow you on Twitter. I am your friend on Facebook, and more recently a subscriber on iTunes, The Triple Threat. How do you think WWE can implement a storyline to unify the WWE and World Heavyweight titles? I think it's time WWE has one main event championship, and the champion can travel to both brands, even though the split means nothing. Keep up the awesome work. The Sound Off is the main event of my Sunday every week, and is quite frankly very addicting to listen to." Well, I believe somebody once referred to it as audio crack, which I think is quite appropriate. I would be in support of your idea. And there were rumors that WWE, that it was an idea they had on the table many months before WrestleMania, that they were going to build to a unification at WrestleMania, and the plan changed. It was a plan. It was never the plan. It was a plan, and obviously they decided to go in a different direction. So the fact that they've at least given this some thought tells me that perhaps one day we will see it. In fact, I'm almost positive one day we will see it. But it's not going to happen anytime soon. I agree. I think having one world champion, it's almost a joke to think that there's more than one world champion. I mean, remember, think back to when ECW, the WWE version, was still around, and they really tried to make the ECW title out to be a real world championship. You had three world titles they were promoting at the time. And they wonder why championships don't mean anything anymore. I mean, it means something to some people, judging on the reaction Christian got when he took the belt off the hook at the pay-per-view, but they really don't. They really don't mean anything. And if you had one, quote, touring world champion who can go to Raw and SmackDown, I think it would go a long way towards making the belt mean something, and quite frankly, making that one person mean something. You know, maybe that's what they need to do. Maybe they need to give a young guy, or even an older guy like Christian, who never had a chance before, an opportunity to be the one sole world champion in the company. You know, because when Cena won the belt at the pay-per-view and Christian won the belt before Orton got it back, I mean, if you did a poll of most WWE fans, and not just the John Cena fans, and you said to them, who's the bigger star here of these two champions? Is it Cena or is it Christian? Who looks to you, who comes off as more of a world champion? I'm willing to bet most people would have said John Cena. Now, Cena has the belt, has held the belt 9 times before he won the belt on Sunday, but that's just, it's a matter of perception. That's how people perceive you. Cena at one time was a jobber. He came to the ring wearing wrestling tights and nobody knew who the fuck he was. He came up with this gimmick, it caught fire, they decided to push him, they decided that he and Batista were the future of this company, and they got pushed to the moon. And it's like, the longer you tell yourself something, even if it's not true, you start to believe it. As the years went on, people bought into Cena. And you may not like him, I may not like a lot of his shtick, but he's the biggest star the company has. And I think that if you gave somebody a chance to be the one sole champion in WWE, somebody other than Cena, other than Orton, whether it's a Del Rio, if it's a Christian, whoever it is, it would make them feel more special. It's a win-win situation. It's not like you're in jeopardy of, you know, ratings on Monday night plummeting because, oh my God, we don't have a champion anymore. The champion can be on both shows and probably would make more money in the process, not for being champion. I answered another question about this, by the way. Christian got no bump in salary for winning the title on Sunday. I mean, maybe 20 years ago it meant something, but it doesn't mean something to the point where if you win the title, you get a bonus check for $10,000. The only, quote, bonus you would get is by being featured, let's say, in a pay-per-view main event, where otherwise you never would be featured in a pay-per-view main event. Then yes, you will get a higher cut of the pay-per-view revenue, but that has nothing to do with the fact that you won or lost the championship. But if you are a champion touring Raw and SmackDown, well, now you're working at least one extra day a week. You're going to make more money anyway. So, I don't know. It's people have different opinions on it. I agree with you. I think it's worth trying. If it fails, you go back to the way you did things before. You know, if you don't take a risk and you don't take a gamble every now and then, like TNA did with the Monday Night Experiment, I was in favor of it. I said the exact same thing on this show. When the news was first floating around that TNA might possibly be moving Impact to Monday nights to go head-to-head with Raw, which was a suicide mission, but I believe I said at the time that, what have you got to lose? If you lose and you're embarrassed and your ratings plummet and you get crushed by WWE, which is what happened, then you just move the show back to Thursday nights, which is exactly what TNA did. But it was a risk worth taking. And WWE is secure enough where, believe you me, if they wanted to try it, it's not like their company is going to fold. They could easily try it if they wanted to, and I hope they do. So that's it for this week's mailbag. I'm going to cinch this bad boy up. We'll have more to get to next week. If you have thoughts, comments, stories about when you became a wrestling fan, whatever it is, you can email me at thesolemonster@gmail.com. I do read everything, even if I can't get to everything on the air. And for the people who sent me, by the way, those stories of how they became a wrestling fan, if they send it to me on Facebook and whatever, you got to email it to me. I ask people to specifically email that to me. If you sent it to me on Facebook, I probably read it, but I can't read it on the air. You got to email me stuff if you want to possibly have it read on the air. So please do that. And I'm toying with the idea of having a new feature on the show where very quickly at the end of each show I just mention the best thing of the week and the worst thing of the week. And I don't know if this will turn out to be an every week thing, but I will say the best thing this week was Christian's title win at Extreme Rules. And in light of what happened, when I heard that he lost the championship, I was so infuriated and just, you know, angered by that whole scenario that I can't list that. So I was going to list Christian versus Randy Orton. As a match, it was the best match of the week by far, but even still, the outcome of that match really pisses me off. So I'm just going to go with Chris Jericho as Thor as being the best thing of the week. The worst thing of the week, obviously, was taking the title off Christian so quickly. It could work out to his benefit in the end. It could be the best thing that ever happened to him if he turns heel and goes on a great heel run and wins the belt back again. I hope he does. Right now, having watched everything on TV, I'm just very disenfranchised. And it's easily the worst thing of the week. Follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/Solemonster, and on Facebook at facebook.com/TheSolemonster. We may be doing another Facebook Q&A soon. I know I paid the price for that last time. I got so many questions, but if it does happen in the next couple of weeks, The only way you can be a part of it is to be a friend on Facebook. So if you're not already on there, then go now. And friend me. I will accept your request. And if we do another mailbag soon, you can be a part of that. And before I end here, I just want to wish my mom a very happy Mother's Day as I record this show. She is enjoying some rays with friends down in Florida. And I just wanted to express my gratitude for having my mother as my mother. I think I've mentioned way back when on this show before some of the personal stuff that we as a family have gone through. You know, my mom was, she's beaten cancer 3 different times. You know, 3 different types of cancer, no less. One of which was leukemia, which, you know, I'll never forget that day back in 2004 when we first heard about that. It was a sucker punch to the gut that I will never forget as long as I live. And it's one of those things when you hear it, you automatically think death sentence. You know, oh my God. You know, you can't go in there and cut it out. It's not a tumor. It's nothing physical. It's a blood cancer. And you don't know where it originates. You don't know what causes it. And, you know, if you yourself will one day come down with it. Although I've been told no, but, you know, what does that really mean? And, you know, when you're told that your mother, who is still a fairly young woman at the time, has got 3.5 years to live max, and I'm not blaming the doctor for it, but just the very nonchalant way that he told us that, that's a day I'll never forget, but it's a day that I'm proud to remember because I sit here now almost 7 years later, and she's still going strong and living life, and I use every Mother's Day as an opportunity to express my gratitude for still having her in my life. So, Mom, I love you. To all the other moms listening, happy Mother's Day. We'll be back next weekend with episode 159. Hopefully, we'll be a little more cheerful. We'll have a few more positive things to be happy about, unlike this week, which started out very promisingly and took a horrible turn for the worse. So, until next time, be well, stay safe, and as always, thank you guys for making this show possible.
Let me tell you something, fella.
This is Joel from Northern Ireland.
Hi, I'm AJ Grimaldo.
And quite simply, the fastest 60 minutes on the internet.
The Solar Monster sounds off on scoops.com.